Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know. Wherever you get podcasts.
Are you the one?
Are you the one?
You're the one.
You've got the European markets drop 5%. The expectation is that the Dow Jones tomorrow may do the same. We could be sliding into an extraordinary recession unless we stimulate the economy immediately.
Barack Obama from last night's debate anticipating, as did Dow futures all over the world, a big plunge on Wall Street after world markets tumbled over the last 2 days while Wall Street was closed for Martin Luther King Day. This morning, so far, the Federal Reserve Board took unprecedented action, historic action, to stave that off, along with trying to stave off broader fears of a U.S. recession. They took an unprecedented 0.75 point interest rate cut. And between their meetings, as of now, though, the Dow is pretty much unassuaged, down about 330 points. Now, later this hour, we will check in on Wall Street to look a little more closely at the numbers and at the potential good or bad of the Fed acting so aggressively. Is this Alan Greenspan's Fed anymore? Would Alan Greenspan have done this? But that was hardly all Barack Obama had to say last night. Can you believe last night's Congressional Black Caucus debate on Martin Luther King Day in South Carolina was the second to last debate of the primary season? Maybe you're relieved, but the three candidates involved, Clinton, Obama, and Edwards, went hard after each other on ethics. They disagree just a little on policy and on who's more progressive, and each took a stab at saying what Martin Luther King would think about these primary choices. So let's begin with the part that's making the most news this morning, though we won't only dwell on this, as I think a lot of the media are doing. But this is definitely making news, and so we'll fact check it a little bit. When Clinton and Obama went after each other harder than ever before, this is what they chose to do at the beginning on ethics and trust. It begins with Obama.
Now, let's talk about Ronald Reagan. What you just repeated here today is patent. Wait, no,
Obama,
Hillary,
Barack,
you just spoke.
I did not say anything about
minutes.
Ronald Reagan. You said two things.
You talked
about admiring
Hillary,
Ronald Reagan,
sorry,
and you talked about the ideas of the Republicans. I didn't talk about Ronald Reagan.
We just had the tape. You just said that I complimented the Republican ideas. That is not true. What I said, and I will provide you with a quote. What I said was that Ronald Reagan was a transformative political figure because he was able to get Democrats to vote against their economic interests to form a majority to push through their agenda, an agenda that I objected to because while I was working on those streets watching those folks see their jobs shipped overseas, you were a corporate lawyer sitting on the board of Walmart. I was fighting these fights. So I want to be clear. What I said had nothing to do with their policies. I spent a lifetime fighting against Ronald Reagan's policies. But what I did say is that we have to be thinking in the same transformative way about our democratic agenda. We've got to appeal to independents and Republicans in order to build a working majority to move an agenda forward. That is what I said. Now, you can dispute that, but let me finish. Hillary, you went on for 2 minutes. Let me finish. The irony of this is that you provided much more fulsome praise of Ronald Reagan in a book by Tom Brokaw that's being published right now, as did Bill Clinton in the past. So these are the kinds of political games that we are accustomed to.
Wait a minute, Senator Edwards, let them wrap up, and then I'm going to come to you.
I just want to clarify the record.
Wait a second, Senator Edwards, hold on. There has been a specific charge leveled against Hillary Clinton, so she can respond. Then I'll bring in Senator Edwards.
I just want to be sure.
We got a long time to go. You'll have a good opportunity.
We're just getting warmed up now. I just want to be clear about this. In an editorial board with the Reno newspaper, you said two different things because I have read the transcript. Mm-hmm. You talked about Ronald Reagan being a transformative political leader. I did not mention his name.
Your husband did.
Well, I'm here. He's
okay,
not.
Okay, well,
and
I can't tell who I'm running against sometimes.
Well, I think we both have very passionate and committed spouses who stand up for us, and I'm proud of that. But you also talked about the Republicans having ideas over the last 10 to 15 years.
I didn't say there were good ones.
Well, you can read the context of it. Well, it certainly came across.
I didn't say there were good ones.
Well, it certainly came across in the way that it was presented, as though the Republicans had been standing up against the conventional wisdom with their ideas. I'm just reacting to the fact, yes, they did have ideas, and they were bad ideas. Bad for America. And I was fighting against those ideas when you were practicing law and representing your contributor, Resco, in his slum landlord business in inner city Chicago.
Hold on one second. Senator Edwards has been remarkably patient during this exchange, and I want him. I don't know if you want to get involved in this, Senator Edwards.
What I want to say first is: are there three people in this debate, not two? And I also want to know on behalf of voters here in South Carolina, this kind of squabbling. How many children is this going to get health care? How many people are going to get an education from this? How many kids are going to be able to go to college because of this? We have got to understand, you know, and I respect both of my fellow candidates, but we have got to understand this is not about us personally. It is about what we are trying to do for this country and what we believe in. Now.
So not the high point of the campaign, obviously, but since a lot of people have been seeing or hearing it, and this took place in South Carolina, where the vote is going to be important this weekend and where that debate got a lot of attention, we thought we would try to truth squad some of that back and forth and put it in context. I want to play one more clip before we bring in our guest, Ben Smith from Politico.com. Obama then came back a few minutes later to respond a little bit more to that attack that he was representing a slum landlord.
Here's what happened. I was an associate at a law firm that represented a church group that had partnered with this individual to do a project, and I did about 5 hours worth of work on this joint project. That's what she's referring to.
Ben Smith has been covering the candidates and blogging the campaign for Politico.com. He also wrote that story that may turn out to have been the first real nail in the coffin for the Rudy Giuliani campaign about the moving around of money with security expenses. But Ben, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So can you give us any more clarity on what that was about Obama and a slum landlord?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of different charges there. We can take them one by one. Tony Resco is a sort of Chicago power broker who, among other things, owned a lot of property. I mean, my impression is he's one of those guys who kind of collected politicians, who did favors for politicians. And he personally, or I think his wife, actually, technically, bought some land next to Obama's house that Obama couldn't afford at the time and then sold it to him. And it's been debated about whether that sale was at a market rate for land in Hyde Park. But
And do I gather that Obama gave him back some money, $40,000?
Well, he got indicted inconveniently last year, and Obama gave him – Obama returned a bunch of money that he had contributed and that he had raised. Obama is mentioned in passing in the indictment as the recipient of some money that Resco had illegally obtained. But there's no question that – I mean, there's no suggestion that Obama was kind of involved in you know, any of his scams, but certainly he was, you know, he was a powerful Chicago politician, and Resco was a guy who was close to the whole Chicago political establishment. I mean, you know, in a way, it's his whitewater. It's, you know, in the sense that he was sort of close to people who were doing shady stuff, but there's not any. I mean, there may have been a quid, but there was no evidence that there was any quo. You know, there's no evidence that Obama did him
policy favors or anything like that. All right. Now, the other line of attack that we heard in that back and forth by Clinton was about Obama saying nice things about Ronald Reagan and Republican economics. Now, we have one of the two here, and we thought listeners who haven't heard this might like to hear exactly what Obama said about Ronald Reagan. That's got to be relevant to a Democratic primary. What did Obama say about Ronald Reagan to a Reno, Nevada newspaper reporter? Here is the clip.
I think it's fair to say the Republicans were the party of ideas for a pretty long chunk of time there over the last 10, 15 years, in the sense that they were challenging conventional wisdom. Ronald Reagan changed the trajectory of America in a way that, you know, Richard Nixon did not, and in a way that Bill Clinton did not. He put us on a fundamentally different path because the country was ready for it. He tapped into what people were already feeling, which is we want clarity, we want optimism, we want a return to that sense of dynamism and entrepreneurship that had been missing.
So actually, that was a fuller version of the Obama clip from Meet the Press than I even thought we had. And he had both ideas in there, Ben. One, that the Republican Party has been the party of ideas over the last 10 or 15 years. And then his rap about Ronald Reagan being a transformational figure in a way that Nixon wasn't and Clinton wasn't. So pretty interesting stuff coming from a Democratic candidate for the presidential nomination.
Right. And he was talking to a conservative, the editorial board of a conservative paper that then endorsed him, partly because he was brave enough to, as they thought, say nice things about Ronald Reagan. It's an ambiguous thing. He didn't say what he then said at the debate. He said he had said, you know, I was praising Ronald Reagan for his political genius in tricking Democrats into voting against their interests.
That's not what he said.
That. No. He also didn't say they were good ideas. And it sounds to me like he was saying was kind of a liberal commonplace almost, like, you know, the conservatives were the ones who won the battle of ideas, and now we need to win the battle of ideas. But, you know, a lot of liberals who don't work for Hillary Clinton were very upset that he hadn't said, and by the way, Reagan, you know, was a horrible president. He didn't even hint at that
right.
he thought
I mean, you could hear it, and I think, you know what, this one we should play again, because it goes by fast, there's a lot of words, there's some nuance there, it's easy to misinterpret. I think, having heard it a number of times myself, that he primarily does political analysis there and says Reagan was a transformational figure as president in a way that Nixon wasn't, the preceding two-term president, and Clinton wasn't, the following two-term president. And he says because the country was ready for him. The country was primed for the things that Ronald Reagan was selling. And yet he does seem to give some credence to what some of those conditions were as seen from a Republican perspective at that time. The strong arm of government on the backs of entrepreneurs, that kind of thing. So it's, you know, there's at least some acknowledgement of what the Republican perception was, of what a lot of Americans' perception was as they voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980. So let's just hear it one more time and everybody can make whatever they will of it for yourselves.
I think it's fair to say the Republicans were the party of ideas for a pretty long chunk of time there over the last 10, 15 years, in the sense that they were challenging conventional wisdom. Ronald Reagan changed the trajectory of America in a way that, you know, Richard Nixon did not, and in a way that Bill Clinton did not. He put us on a fundamentally different path because the country was ready for it. He tapped into what people were already feeling, which is we want clarity, we want optimism, we want a return to that sense of dynamism and entrepreneurship that had been missing.
So there it is. And folks, you can just decide whatever you think that means. That is up to you as voters with the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut primaries all coming 2 weeks from today. Ben Smith, Obama's line of attack primarily, and they each seem to come to this debate primed to go after each other in a particular way. Hillary in those ways we just heard. Barack saying that Bill Clinton has been so sicked on him as an attack dog to distort his record in the campaign. And funny enough, I saw your article on Politico.com in the last day that indicates that the Bill Clinton attack dog act may be unpopular with the media, but apparently popular with Democratic primary voters?
Well, I mean, the campaign certainly thinks so at this point. I mean, you know, there's a whole line like, oh my gosh, Bill Clinton is behaving inappropriately for a silver-haired ex-president. But you know, there isn't. He's very popular with voters. I've never talked to a voter the only people I've talked to who express that are reporters and sort of beltway types. And he seems to have done a fair amount of damage to Obama. You know, I mean, he's really been able to, for the first time in this campaign, you know, raise questions about Obama's record of votes on Iraq, for instance, which was something the Clinton campaign has been pushing for months and months, but it took, like, the sort of Bill Clinton flips out story to push that into the kind of into the bloodstream.
And later in the program, next hour, when we do a close look at Clinton's record in the Senate, we took a close look at Obama's yesterday, but we will also compare three particular votes on which Obama and Clinton voted differently, and they were the only three, which says something about something, that a congressional quarterly analysis could find. But on three relatively major pieces of legislation, they did diverge, and we'll take a closer look at that later on.
But none of them on Iraq. Well, there's one fairly minor Iraq divergence. But
that's right. None of them on Iraq from the time that he got to the Senate.
Right.
But then the question, and you can give us your take on this, the question of distortion comes when Clinton tries to emphasize that, seeming to downplay whether they were very different before the war.
Well, you know, I mean, she in fact said, you know, oh, you know, you gave a very nice speech in 2002. I mean, it's sort of about the way the congressional debate in Iraq shifts. He certainly didn't come in with the Russ Feingold line of we need to end this thing right now, which is where everybody's wound up. But he came in with basically the kind of mainstream Democratic line of we're there, we should, you know, the issue has been the handling of the war, we need to handle it better. You know, but at the same time, he clearly, in his Trump card and all these things, is he was against the war, he thought it was a bad idea when she voted to authorize.
And what was the thing that he allegedly took down from his website that gave some support to President Bush?
These are two different things. He took the famous 2002 speech, which is now his sort of the touchstone of his campaign in a certain way, was down from his website, you know, for a year or two after he gave it. I have no idea what the motive for that was. He said, or somebody in his campaign said, well, it was dated. I mean, I think they didn't realize that, you know, that he and his staff didn't realize what, you know, how prescient he would seem when he didn't seem so prescient.
Mm-hmm.
He also said in 2004 that while he disagreed with Bush's decision to go to war and disagreed with how Bush was handling the war, that their goals were more or less the same. You know, that at this point he and Bush and everybody else are just trying to kind of get the thing figured out.
And that's all he meant by that they were trying to all get the thing figured out now
were
already over there?
Right. Well, as opposed to saying, no, we differ because I want the troops home now, which was what, say, Russ Feingold was saying at the time.
All right.
So he was taking a fairly, you know, a sort of centrist, the kind of mainstream Democrat position before there was a clear sense that the war had gone wrong.
Let's go on to a loftier part of the debate. This is actually the very end last night, and because it was Martin Luther King Day, Wolf Blitzer of CNN asked them who they each thought Martin Luther King might endorse in this primary campaign. We'll hear their three answers.
For two reasons. One is that we've talked about this a great deal already. I met with Martin III in Atlanta on Saturday, and he was very kind about me pushing the single biggest issue with two biggest issues that Dr. King stood for, which are the issues of equality and ending poverty in America. I've been on at least part of his Poor People's Campaign. I was in Marks, Mississippi, among other places. I mean, I have been pushing this issue as aggressively and as loudly as I possibly can, and I will do it as long as I'm alive because it is central to what I believe. He also worked very hard for the Voting Rights Act, and he would look at an America today where almost half of our people don't vote. They're disenchanted. They are, Brock's spoken about this, they feel disengaged. And what we need is a president of the United States who actually believes to their core in equality, who's willing to fight for that equality, who's willing to do things that may not be politically popular. And fighting to end poverty in America may not get you any votes, but it is the right thing to do.
Senator? Well, I don't think Dr. King would endorse any of us. I think what he would call upon the American people to do is to hold us accountable. And this goes to the core differences, I think, in this campaign. I believe change does not happen from the top down. It happens from the bottom up. Dr. King understood that. It was those women who were willing to walk instead of ride the bus. were union workers who were willing to take on violence and intimidation to get the right to organize. It was women who decided, you know, I'm as smart as my husband, I better get the right to vote. Them arguing, mobilizing, agitating, and ultimately forcing elected officials to be accountable, I think that's the key. So that has been a hallmark of my career. Transparency and accountability, getting the American people involved, that's how we're going to bring about change. That's why I want to be President of the United States, to respect the power of the American people to bring about change.
Senator Clinton.
Well, there is no doubt that change comes from the extraordinary efforts of the American people. I've seen it in my life. I'm sitting here as a result of that change. It is also true, and Dr. King understood this, he campaigned for political leaders, he lobbied them, he pushed them, he cajoled, he did everything he could to get them over the line so that they would be part of the movement that he gave his life for. There are people sitting in this audience right now, John Lewis, Jim Clyburn, they were part of those kinds of efforts, going so far as they could to make it clear that we had to live up to our values and our ideals. And then there was a meeting of morality and politics, and the political leaders finally responded. The American people should not have to work so hard to get leaders who will actually help them and recognize we are strongest when we lead by our values. Dr. King transformed the lives of so many of us, and I intend to do whatever I can to make his legacy real in the lives of Americans.
So the question was, why do you think that Martin Luther King would endorse you? And John Edwards started with two reasons. Obama and Clinton didn't quite go so far as to say Martin Luther King would endorse them, but there they were talking about what they would like us to believe are the heart and soul of each of their campaigns. And Ben Smith from Politico.com, let me ask you about John Edwards. And there on Martin Luther King Day, I think it is legitimate to recognize that if King was on a poor people's campaign and used to talk about trying to abolish poverty, which hardly anybody talks about anymore, John Edwards is talking about trying to abolish poverty.
Yeah, there was a kind of clarity to Edwards' answer that the other two didn't have, because as you say, King's, you know, great campaign, although it's not, have you seen historically, was against poverty, you know, is sort of the other half of his life. And that has been how Edwards has cast this campaign. King's son, Martin III, didn't quite endorse Edwards, but sent him a letter encouraging him to stay in the race, you know, all but endorsed him over the weekend. And yeah, I mean, Edwards actually is, you know, now in a sense he seems to have nothing kind of politically left to lose here, and didn't seem in that debate to be, as he had been before, kind of tactically positioning himself with regard to the other two, but really trying to kind of say what he thought and inserted himself quite effectively into both sides of the debate. He's sort of an interesting guy to watch right now.
He seemed to come out of the box quickly at the beginning of the campaign. He had been campaigning basically for 4 years since he was the vice presidential nominee in 2004. He had developed very specific policy positions. That was a big story at the beginning of the campaign. He came out with a health care plan that was universal, that was paid for, he said, by certain changes in the Bush tax cuts and some other things. He came out with a specific anti-poverty program, set of programs, really. He came out with some other things, and he had this good reputation. Remember in 2004 when Kerry almost felt obliged to put him on the ticket as vice presidential candidate because Edwards had sparked such a chord among Democratic primary voters. And yet he never really quite took off, it seems, at least so far, against Clinton and Obama in the polls or in the actual voting so far. He did terribly in Nevada.
I mean, there, you know, the different ways to explain it. One is that he explains that he's not a celebrity and that they're celebrities. There's also the fact that his record is this albatross around his neck. I mean, he's just, when he was in a position of power, he did not have the record of the anti-poverty crusader he has now. And he's totally disavowed a huge range of his key Senate votes on trade with China, on personal bankruptcy, on the war, in a way that, you know, just really just hamstrings him.
By the way, I had said earlier that this was the second-to-last debate. I believe this is the second-to-last Democratic primary debate, and there are two Republican debates left to go. You're involved, or Politico.com is involved in one of them, right?
Yeah, we're co-hosting a Republican debate on January 30th and a Democratic debate on January 31st in California.
So you're involved in both of
those
too.
On our website.
And one other thing about Edwards that you were writing the other day, that he could still wind up playing kingmaker. I mean, who knows if they deadlock in terms of delegates? It's not just how many popular votes you win in the primaries; it's how many delegates.
Right.
If they deadlock, he's sitting there waiting in the wings, potentially, or as he continues to gather delegates, since the Democrats tend to award them on a proportionate basis rather than winner-take-all in many of the states, that Edwards could still have a very key role to play in deciding who the Democratic nominee is. Talk about that.
Well, it's a funny system. It's a there's a 15. It's proportional representation by state and by congressional district, and then there's a 15% threshold. So if you get 15% of the votes in a state or in a congressional district, you get some delegates. The effect of that is to totally wipe out somebody who's at 10%, the Dennis Kuciniches of the world. You know, you people who have real support but not 15% just get totally wiped out. Flip side of that is if you have 16% support, you get more than 16% of the delegates. It pushes you up. There's a sort of leveling effect. And so if Edwards, who's kind of hovering around 15% in the polls, can in some of these key states get 15 or, you know, or more percent of the vote, or particularly kind of in regions around those states, he'll wind up with a pretty good chunk of delegates. And in a three-way race, you know, you need an absolute majority of the more than 4,000 delegates. You know, a guy holding 20% of them, you know, and he can't necessarily give his delegates marching orders. I mean, they're not pawns; they're people. But they're people who owe him a kind of debt in a certain way, and who would be likely. I mean, he would certainly probably be the single most influential voice in brokering a deal. But of course, it's very speculative. It's a long way away. He got pretty well wiped out in Nevada; got no delegates. So that's also. And then if he gets wiped out in his home state of South Carolina, that could make it very hard for him to succeed.
And that's the other thing. The last thing that we need to note about this debate is that it did take place in South Carolina in advance of this Saturday's South Carolina primary. It's the state in which John Edwards was born. He won the state in 2004 in the primary. And so maybe he made a good enough showing last night. And he did make a very good showing, I thought, in a number of respects, policy as well as looking a little bit above the fray when the other two were getting into the mud. But we'll see how he does in South Carolina. Maybe that'll turn around his campaign, or maybe, as you say, that'll bury it. But Ben Smith from Politico.com, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we'll check in on Wall Street after the Federal Reserve Board's very unprecedented 0.75 percentage point rate cut and the Dow opening down 300 points anyway.
Are you the one?